Hello, Park Street. Today is day 5 of our journey through the Book of John and Lent. And I'm happy to be here with Steve and Kelly Knowlton tonight. Although, Steve, I don't know if have you actually committed to being part of this?
Well, it's in my house, so I assume I am part of it.
Okay, that's good. Thank you guys for agreeing to do this.
Absolutely.
Most people around Park Street probably know at least who you are, but can you give a quick background on how long you've been coming to Park Street? And, you know, stuff you do around the church and all that.
Sure. We became part of the Park Street family in 2007, which is when we got married. Mm-hmm. And Steve was at that point working at Red Red Design, the former Red Red Design, with Robin Roberts and Jillian Van Dyne and Allie Barnhart and Doug Cooper. And we were kind of at a place where we had served in our previous church, and we kind of needed a break. And we were welcomed to Park Street and, like, immediately felt like this is where we're supposed to be. This is where God is calling us in this chapter of our lives. Like, now that we are young marrieds and we have a chance to kind of fresh start, like, yeah, it was very apparent that Park Street was where we were supposed to be.
We were both, like, very involved in our previous church, doing things together there. But there was a lot of stress in some of the things we were doing, and it was good to have, like a clean, fresh start with a community of other young marrieds and other supportive people. So it was a good, like, it was a good reset button that I think was, we did at the right time. So, yeah.
And I've been involved in worship ministry through most of the time that I've been at Park Street, leading, like, as a vocalist or at the piano, even back in the Crossing days. But I've also been involved in planning of worship services and all the various elements for most of the time that I've been around. It's kind of like the thing I do.
Yeah.
How about you?
I am on the leadership board currently, and in the past I did some other Sunday morning support things, but then I switched to holding kids, my kids, during services, and now I'm just kind of serving in a leadership role right now, and enjoy talking with people on Sunday morning.
Cool. Well, thanks for doing this again. Yeah. Today's passage is John 2, verses 13 through 25. Mm-hmm. So I think, Kelly, you said you were going to go ahead and read it. So
I am, and this is coming from the New International Version today. When it was almost time for the Jewish Passover, Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple courts, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and others sitting at tables exchanging money. So he made a whip out of cords and drove all from the temple courts, both sheep and cattle. He scattered the coins of the money changers and overturned the tables. To those who sold doves, he said, "Get these out of here. Stop turning my father's house into a market." His disciples remembered that it is written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." The Jews then responded to him, "What sign can you show us to prove your authority to do all this?" Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and I will raise it again in 3 days." They replied, "It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it in 3 days?" But the temple he had spoken of was his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples recalled what he had said. Then they believed the scripture and the words that Jesus had spoken. Now, while he was in Jerusalem at the Passover festival, many people saw the signs he was performing and believed in his name. But Jesus would not entrust himself to them, for he knew all people. He did not need any testimony about mankind, for he knew what was in each person.
Cool, thank you. As you read through that, is there a part of the passage you want to start kind of discussing first, or that stood out to you at all, or not?
I kind of saw this as like two chunks. There's the beginning part where Jesus is fired up and he's driving everybody out of the temple because they've completely missed the mark on what that's supposed to be about. And then there's the second part where Jesus kind of doubled down on that and he says, okay, you've missed the point that, like, my father's house, like, this physical temple is important and you're not treating it with the respect it deserves, but, like, also I am the temple. And of course, because we're, like, looking at this with 2019 eyes and ears, like, we know what that's about, but I'm sure the disciples he was talking to had like had no clue about that. So there's like kind of two different aspects of Jesus that we're seeing here. But I actually really love this particular like side of Jesus that we're seeing in this passage. Like I really love the like fired up, letting people have it Jesus. Like, I don't know. I feel like most of the time in scripture, we're like, we view Jesus as like, he's chill. Like, he's always peaceful. He's always relaxed. Like, but there's something about like that Jesus is like, no, look, like this is worth getting upset about. And he's going to like let people have it, that I'm kind of like, yes, that's good. Like, Jesus doesn't always have to be like quiet, calm, soft-spoken Jesus, but sometimes like righteous anger is,
right,
is worth it. So,
like, the love your enemies kind of bro. Like, love your enemies, bro, and let's just all get along.
Right. Like Jesus is, like, always singing Kumbaya or right, something. Yeah. But, like, and this is not that Jesus.
I think when I think of, you know, what was going on, I mean, we really focus on Jesus showing up, and we picture the something we've probably seen in a movie where he's, like, flips over some table and then a bunch of coins scatter all over the floor and chickens go crazy. But I think, like, the zoomed out context is like there's like a whole lot of people showing up and cycling through that place, and when he, I mean, this isn't just like he goes to the like Ashland farmer's market and like tells people that they need a shoe. This is like, I mean, there's like a lot of action and a lot of noise and commotion, and it's no small thing that he's doing here, and the people that would be cycling through here that are getting taken advantage of by these moneylenders, I mean, these people would probably, they're traveling there and they would show up and feel like, I don't know, like if you go through an airport, or you show up, like you take your family on vacation and you show up and all of a sudden there's all these like extra stupid fees that like, I don't get very excited about those. I tend to lose my cool a little bit, and it's about like parking fees,
right.
And it's not about misrepresenting what God's house and God's kingdom is supposed to be like. So, I think there's like that anger side of things, and then I think there's also like a, you know, if I set all that aside, it's about like respect and what is the intent of this. And
I feel like Jesus too, like in his anger, is he's doing it because he's like, he's trying to set people straight, but he's also sticking up for the people that are being oppressed and taken advantage of by what's going on. Like, I think when I've read this in the past, I always think about the, okay, there are people selling things and they're not supposed to be doing that, and Jesus is mad about them making it a commercial affair. But I don't think I stopped to think about the fact that, like, okay, this selling of animals for sacrifices is common practice in this day. Like, that's not anything that's particularly despicable, although we look at it now knowing that, like, you know, animal sacrifices as they were in that time are, like, not the way that things need to happen. But the fact that, like, people are turning a profit on this, like, it's not just, okay, this is an even exchange because we want to help people enter into the presence of God, but that the people that are doing this are like, how can we benefit from this? How can we prey upon people that are traveling from far away who don't have the right currency? Like, what can we do so that we can work this to our advantage? And like, that's the part that feels like really icky and skeezy that Jesus is addressing. And like, I don't think I realized that part before, and I really appreciate that he's like, look, like, this is not cool at all. But that you're basically like preying on people that couldn't afford to make these sacrifices and come into the presence of God, and you're only allowing them to do it when you are profiting from it.
I do know that somebody spoke. I heard somebody speak about this recently, and it was probably someone with a much better pulse on the brethren. View of, you know, how we should respond.
Oh, like violence and non-resistance.
Like that. And yeah. It was probably someone that was, you know, was like super passive.
Like, I mean, Jesus like wasn't Jason, like throwing punches.
Someone super passive like Jason.
Yeah.
I mean, so I would encourage the listeners out there to dig into that side of things. I don't have the answer on the tip of my tongue here, but I know that, you know, I think it challenges us to, I don't think this is a blanket, like, this is your chance to go out there and
holy rage,
go out there and go berserk on people. This is not that. I think Jesus, I mean, one, like, this was Jesus doing it. And two, you know, there are specific intents here. And so this is often abused as an excuse to go out there and, I don't know, like, deface some billboard or something.
Let people have it in the name of God.
Yeah, and as fun as that is to lose your mind about extra parking charges or whatever, whatever the offense people are doing that takes advantage of others or of the name of God, like, I think you have to, it's worth reading into what you should, how you should actually approach it.
Yeah, I mean, you said a lot of good stuff, both of you. I think the fact that it's the temple and the fact that it's Passover means, I mean, like you said, they have this captive audience. I mean, if you're Jewish, you're there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the temple is the place where, you know, you are kind of, some animal, right, is sacrificed. And it's a ritual in which you become, like, you know, your sin is taken away and you become able to, you know, have a relationship with God. It's a place where, you know, at least where God's presence was to come and be, mm-hmm. and where, you know, especially the common person could come, not the whole way, but some of the way in, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And you know, you have these, you know, toll booth kind of religious people that are, you know, instead of facilitating that, you know, reconciliation with God, they're placing obstacles and profiting
right.
from it.
Right.
And it even, I mean, verse 16, to the people who sold doves, which I'd have to go back and look other gospels when they tell the story about Mary and Joseph going to the temple. I think there's the story when Jesus gets kind of left behind when he's 12.
Mm-hmm.
It mentions that they sacrificed doves, and doves were the, if you could not afford any other animal, you know, like,
yeah.
you can't get yeah. to the, you know, you can't afford the sheep or the cattle or whatever else. Mm-hmm. You know, you have no, you're the poorest of the poor, you know. And it says specifically, Jesus went over to the people who sold doves and, like, just let them have it. Because,
yeah.
you know, it's like payday lending times 100 or something. You know, it's like,
yeah.
it's like, to, it's just, you know,
yeah.
it's just his. And verse 17, you know, passion for God's house will consume me. There was another translation, I forget which translation I saw, it was passion for God's house will be my undoing.
Hmm.
You know, like, it's like he's going at the people who are in charge of this whole system, and the people, I mean, he's creating enemies with the people who will eventually
yeah.
be behind,
yeah.
you know, his execution.
Yeah. Well, and I think this is, you know, I know that the people that are in the courts, it's related to, this isn't Jesus going out and beating up somebody, making poor choices at the well. This is like him inward in the church saying, like, you got, like, this is a misrepresentation of how it's supposed to be. And so I think that's an important distinction. I mean, people look at this and think, like, I'm supposed to go out and stir things up. And at the end of the day, we probably need, like, this is encouraging gut checking ourselves within the church, making sure that we don't have our own moneylender booth set up in the church. This isn't about going out and flipping tables. It's about staying in and
right.
and
yeah.
checking ourselves out.
Do we see ourselves in the Jesus role or in the Pharisee role? Right? Are we're the religious establishment?
I think in most of Jesus's teachings, it's
yeah.
it's easy to initially put ourselves in
yeah.
in line with the person who is the hero of the story, or the person who's clearly in the right, when, like, 95% of the, maybe 98% of the time,
yeah.
we're the one that's like, oh, that's the bad guy in the story, and that's actually me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
which is a hard pill to swallow, but, like, I think if I came at scripture from that vantage point more often, I would probably learn a lot more and grow a lot more than, you know,
yeah.
thinking I'm always in the right.
Yeah,
no, I can hear you on that for sure. Another thing that's interesting, I about this passage is the passage yesterday is Jesus' first essentially sign or miracle where he turns water into wine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to me that this passage is kind of placed right next to that passage where he talks, you know, we talk about kind of like the wedding feast at the end of, you know, time or the beginning of time, mm-hmm. if you want to look at it, where, you know, this idea that Christ and the church are like, he's the bride and we're the bridegroom, and there's going to be this massive wedding feast. And in order to get to that, you know, Jesus is thinking even in that story yesterday about his coming death. And now John places this story right there, like, kind of as like a foreshadowing, you know,
because
mm-hmm. This actually, I mean, this happened a few days before he was arrested, but he places it at the beginning of the gospel in order to kind of say like, hey, this happened. I'm going to kind of show it to you at the beginning as kind of to set the stage for the fact yeah. that like there's going to be a lot of tension between Jesus and the religious people. And there's multiple places in the passage where it says like in verse 17, his disciples remembered this prophecy. And then in verse 22, after he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered he had said this.
Yeah.
Like, after everything had all played out, they started looking back at all of the things
it's
did.
It's like a Christopher Nolan film. Right?
Yeah. It started making sense yeah. after the fact.
Yeah. Can I also just interject that sometimes it's comical how, like, doofy the disciples are sometimes. That, like, they're the people that are at, like, Jesus' inner circle. And that things just like miss them right and yeah. left.
Yeah, they're like Shakespeare characters where you're like, dude, just figure this irony out. But,
yeah,
but it's easy for us to say because like we've had like you know thousands of years to grapple with this. Yeah. So,
you were mentioning something just a minute ago that reminded me, Ryan. We've been going through Hebrews in our small group, and last night we were talking through you know, the idea that Jesus is better than, and we're kind of cycling through, you know, all the things mentioned in Hebrews, Jesus, all the things that they were in
the sacrificial things.
Like Moses and the prophets,
Old Testament figures,
yeah,
right?
Yes,
and I think this is, I mean, this there's a. It's, you know, you were just mentioning the water and the wine, and then there's this interaction here at the temple, and I think having just read through that last night, I mean, this is a good season to be thinking of those things that, like, we literally went out around the room, and Scott Williams made, like, he said, this is going to be cheesy, but we're going to do it. And he said, Jesus is better than, and then we had to say the thing that was in the passage that we read. But I think this season of Lent is a good time to remember that and reflect on that, whether it's the even the rituals that we do that we think connect us more deeply with God. It's a time to just even remember Jesus is better than that thing, even those religious rituals that we think draw us closer.
Yeah.
Like, of course it's better than just binging Netflix or like random things in life, but like even those habits that we get in, Jesus is better than those things.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting, when I think about Lent in general, it's like, it's about, I tend to focus it on what I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
like where I'm giving up or the practice I'm going to initiate, as opposed to kind of just trying to empty myself of things and letting God direct it instead. So, I mean, I can hear you on that. The, you know, going back to what we were saying before about, you know, God, you know, Jesus getting angry and, you know, people using this as a passage to kind of justify their own anger or whatever. It's like,
I mean, that's fun, but
yeah,
it's accurate.
Right. It's like, to me, verses 18 and 19, right? The Jewish leaders demanded, like, what are you doing? If God gave you the authority, show us a miraculous sign to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, show us your credentials, which I guess if this happened a few days before he was arrested anyway, it's like they had seen lots of signs,
mm-hmm.
which they had kind of chosen to ignore. But it's interesting that Jesus brings up, you know, like, okay, if you want a sign, if you want to see why I have the authority to come in here and, like, light this up, like, I'm going to die, and I could take it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not here to, like, to bring fire and brimstone on you. You know, right. I'm here to take fire and brimstone into myself. You know, it's like, how many people are willing to die for what they believe in, right? And the Jewish leaders are asking for something that shows he's powerful, or that he, you know, has more, he's without a doubt sent from God. And it's like, and Jesus is like, okay, you want that? Like, watch what I'm willing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, and he says it in a cryptic way too. He's like, it's like, they're like, you know, he's like, he says something and they totally miss it.
Yeah. Right. But so then they're not like, okay, you've convinced us today. But then, you know, after he dies and is resurrected, says, you know, then they believed what the scripture had said. Then they realized that what Jesus had
just
said.
Just imagine him showing up there and being like, he's in his head. He's like, totally going to like die and come back in a couple days. And he's like, dude, you're selling those birds for a penny and trying to like make money off of it and saying this is all equivalent. And he's probably just like, yeah, you people are making me lose my mind here.
Well, right. And that's when he's kind of like, you know, he's like, look, like, I can take this. I'm going to destroy this whole system. Mm-hmm. This whole system's becoming unnecessary, and it's because of me. You know, and they're like, it's taken 46 years to build it, but it also took, what, thousands and thousands of years to get to the point where it was built. You know, like, it went from a tent to a temple to, you know, and it's like this whole progression through the Old Testament is just thousands of years of, you know, where is the place where we can go meet with God? And Jesus is like, no, after I'm here, like, it's all this is, you don't need any of this anymore.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome.
It's totally awesome.
Yeah. So, and I do think it's cool how people, you know, the fact that after, you know, they remember after the fact, you know, it's like Jesus, you don't just understand Jesus day one, you know, like, I feel like you start to understand Jesus in phases and slowly over many years and like, just, only in hindsight does it become, you know, a lot.
Sure. Each new situation is the opportunity for God to reveal himself to you because of the context of what you've experienced. And
yeah,
it's fun. You go through the waves of like you're excited and you're lit up and you're like, I got this figured out. And you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And then you're back like, okay, yeah. And then you're like, no, I actually don't. And so it's awesome how you, it's good to keep getting challenged, you know, especially reading through passages like this one and think about how that ties in with the bigger picture. I'm going to walk into church and flip a table over this week.
Flip over the one where we're...
Don't flip over the coffee table.
Don't flip over the coffee table and don't flip over the Capitol campaign table either.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just kidding. I'll edit that out. It's fine. Cool.
Awesome.
Well, thanks guys for recording this episode. I appreciate it. I appreciate the discussion and your insights, and maybe we can do another one sometime.
I would love that. That would be great.
Yeah, if you come back over to my house, then I'll join you.
We'll do another one in a few days.
Okay.
How about that? Okay. All right, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.